All right. We need something musical to open the show, right? Here's my jingle. Can you sing? Can you dance? Pull a rabbit from your pants? Tell a rhyme? Tell a joke? Burp when you drink a Coke? That's not a talent. Jump a hurdle, do a flip, get your dog to do a trick, top talent. Play piano, play guitar, hit a ball really far. You a superstar, let's find out who you are. I sure would be keen to interview Billy Dean, top talent. Top talent, this is my podcast, top talent. I'm glad his last name is Dean, it's such an easy thing to rhyme. Anyway, there it is. That's my jingle. Good. Got me in the mood. Well, I didn't need that jingle to get me in the mood for this episode because this is the podcast that originates from the capital region of upstate New York, the Albany area. My name is Richie Phillips. I did morning radio for 30 years. I was the co-host of a morning show and used to have my keyboard on the air and do stupid songs like the one you just heard. I try to cover everything that's going on in the news and that type of thing, but that's not my job today. My job today is to talk to famous folk. And I was involved recently in a really exciting show with a great friend of mine, a genius marketer and show put togetherer, Kevin Richards. We did a Randy Travis show when he came to this area, up close and personal with Randy Travis. That is one of a lot of different shows that Kevin is putting on here in upstate New York, more specifically in the Glens Falls area at the Wood Theater in Glens Falls. Beautiful theater. We also took a little drive to Laconia, New Hampshire. Hello, Laconia, New Hampshire, to all the folks there. Had a great time there at the Colonial Theater in Laconia. With the Randy Travis show, I had the privilege of doing a little opening act for the program and met Randy and his incredible wife. But enough name dropping. The reason I even mentioned that show is that this gentleman is going to be part of the series that Kevin is putting on, the Up Close and Personal series. And his name is Billy Dean. Now, Billy Dean, for the uninitiated, had a lot of hits in the 90s, I guess. It was probably when he really, really, really took off. You may remember Only Here for a Little While, Billy the Kid, and the classic Somewhere in My Broken Heart, which is now the 30th anniversary of Somewhere in My Broken Heart. He recut that, as a matter of fact, with an orchestra. And you can hear that on his latest album, Let 'Em Be Little, beautiful song written with Richie McDonald from Lone Star. He's got a lot of songs to his credit. And let me just get to the right page here so I can whip off some of the awards that he has won. He's won awards from the ACM, the CMA, the American Music Awards. He was on the album, which I forgot to mention during the podcast. He was on the album Common Thread, which is a tribute to the Eagles. And just really a thrill to be able to talk to him. Got him on the phone. He was at an airport flying off to possibly do another gig. I don't know. Without further ado, let's go to my interview with Billy Dean, who is going to be at the Glens Falls Wood Theater and is going to be there Saturday, September the 23rd, which means nothing to you folks who are listening to this 4 months down the road. But again, I thought it would be very interesting for you to hear the conversation with him. We talk about his music. We talk about his family. We talk about a lot of stuff. And without further ado and me flapping my gums, here we go with my interview with Billy Dean. And by the way, tickets at this point, at this writing, are still available. You can go to KevinRichards.com or the Wood Theater box office in Glens Falls. Get your tickets. Gonna be a great show.
Top talent.
Not Billy Dean. Well, I have him on the line. Billy Dean in an airport somewhere in the United States. we haven't defined where. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning. I'm sitting. I think I'm in Norfolk, Virginia.
Oh.
I think that's where I'm. It is. It's crazy. The 90s have been really, really back in full swing again, and it's keeping us quite busy and on the road. And I'm very appreciative and very grateful for it.
Interesting. Do you find that there's more interest in the 90s in the South? You know what I mean? Is there more work down there than in the North, or does it matter?
No, not really. It's been all over. You know, wow. a lot of the fairs, you know, out in Montana, Wyoming, and Utah, we did a lot of the West Coast this year, a lot of the rodeos and things like that. you know, are back. And, you know, we're finding, we're seeing a lot of these 25 year olds out here, you know, two stepping and doing all the kind of the 90s dances, you know. And, these kids were in car seats when our songs were being played on the radio. They've been indoctrinated by their parents, you know.
That's so great. Well, you're coming up here to Glens Falls. Actually, I saw your Facebook post. You did an ad for it, and we appreciate that.
Hello, all my little friends up there in New York, the New York State, Glens Falls, New York. You know, September the 23rd, I am coming to tell you some stories behind some of the hits. 90 Minutes of 90s Country in Glens Falls, New York at the Wood Theater. That's September the 23rd. I would love it if you guys come spend your Saturday with me. Glens Falls, New York, the Wood Theater. It's a 7:45 p.m. show and stories behind some of the 90s hits for you. Let's do it. We'll have a great evening.
Yeah, man, no problem. We'll do another little shout out too before we head up that way for sure.
Yeah, and you do. The guy who organized it, the mastermind behind doing these shows, his name is Kevin Richards. I don't know if you talked to him personally, but or you haven't probably talked to him.
Right. No, I haven't.
Okay, because he wanted to make sure that you understood what the format was. But from your ad, I think you do understand that it's kind of like a close up, kind of like a combination of Q&A and. He gets to talk to you a bit, then you do your set, then you sit down and talk a little more. So it's kind of like that. We just finished doing the thing with Randy Travis, and I was one of the opening acts for it. It was just, oh, my God. We did five different shows, you know, in Glens Falls, and also we did in New Hampshire. And, have you ever met him? What a, and his wife?
Oh, yeah, man. He was the first one. He was my first major... you know, cut as a songwriter.
Really?
Randy Travis recorded Somewhere in My Broken Heart on the No Holding Back album.
Oh, he did. Oh,
he sure did. It was right before I got my record deal. Now he put it on the album. It didn't come out as a single, which actually turned out to be really great for me because I was able to, you know, put it out on the radio and all that stuff. But, it was, Randy Travis that recorded it first. And I've had several times I've had a chance to talk to him a little bit about it. And he's good friends with my buddy Paul Overstreet, who wrote a lot of the hits for him.
Wow. I know you've how many years did you live in? Did you ever live actually in Nashville?
Yeah, I was in Nashville for over 30 years.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, I moved up around 1984, I think, 83, 84. And lived and recorded up there all during the 90s. And I'm originally from Florida, though, and moved back to Florida about 6 years ago to be, you know, my mom and my family and spend some quality time with them. And so never looked back. But Nashville has certainly changed since I've been there, no doubt about it.
And I've been reading a lot about your family. And tell me if this is wrong, because sometimes Wikipedia gets things all screwed up. And if you go on ChatGPT, that thing makes things up.
Right.
So you are Billy Dean. Tell me if I'm wrong. Your father is Billy Dean.
Yep.
Your son is William Dean.
Yep.
Now, do you call him Billy or do you call him something else like William?
His middle name. He goes by his middle name as well. William Eli Dean. And that was my grandfather's name. And I'm William Harold Dean, named after Harold, my dad's brother who's killed in World War II, William Harold Dean. And then my dad, he didn't even have, his name was just Billy Dean. I remember my aunt telling me, because there were eight kids in the family and he was one of the youngest, and said, yeah, I don't even think he had a name until they came around and started doing the census and said, we got to call him something. It was just calling him boy. call him Billy.
But here's another thing. You tell me if I'm wrong. Is your mother, is her name Odine? Odine?
Odine. That's Odine Dean was her name.
Odine Dean.
That's right.
I read that.
O-D-E-N-E, Odine Dean.
Yeah, I ran upstairs and asked my wife, how would you pronounce Odine? It's so it is Odine, not Odine, not Odin.
Right. Oh, O-D-E-N-E. Yep. Odine was her name. And where in the world they came up with that one, I have no idea. And for the years, 30 something years, people thought her name in my hometown was just O. They thought it was Odine.
Odine. Okay. Right. Yeah. And of course, I'm sure you get this a lot. I saw it on Facebook. My wife asked me the same thing. You're no relation to Jimmy Dean sausage.
No relation, but I do have an incredible letter that he wrote to me. I laminated it right after the ACM Awards. He wrote a letter congratulating me on the awards and everything, and he signed it, "Love, Dad."
Oh, he did, really? That's
I think everybody was asking him, you know, if I was his son, too, for the longest time.
And then I went down this Dean rabbit hole on Google. So I Googled Dean. The surname originally derives from the Old English word Denu, D-E-N-U, which means valley. Oh. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that. That is really interesting.
And it originates from Wiltshire in England. I can't even say.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yep. We track to the British Isles, where a lot of our family came from, that area.
Nice. Nice. Yep. These are the deep questions that I ask.
I love it. I love it. It's not the typical boxer or briefs.
Right. I'm sure you've had those questions a million times. Now, you do have a new song out. I want to push this, right? Is it Wrapped?
Let's see. I have a new album that came out last year. But the name of the album is called The Rest of It's Mine.
Right.
And we have, I don't know if the label's released another song or getting ready to or not, but what was the name of you thought it was?
I saw it on Apple Music, Wrapped, R-A-P-T, featuring Victor Wainwright. Oh, maybe there's another Billy Dean out there.
I think, yeah, there's a, that's a different, you know what?
Get out of here.
In fact, my nephew was like, dude, you sound like you're doing a hip hop song. I said, no, that's not me. That's somebody else.
Oh, really?
I think that's somebody else. Yeah. I think I'm pretty sure. Cause I've had two or three, my young nephews clicked on that, and they knew it wasn't me, but they were laughing. They said, man, there's somebody out here with your name that's doing this explicit music.
Oh,
well.
I'm glad whatever. I didn't play a cut from it right here.
Right, right. No, that was my we had Saltwater Cowboy, right. And the rest of it was the last couple of things. We're going to – I don't know what we're going to do. I think we're probably going to be working on I got a lot of masters in the can that I have never released, and they've already been recorded. And of course I got a lot of new songs. I got Luke Combs and Craig Morgan just recorded a song of mine. Craig's been opening a show with it called Raise the Bar. And I think that's, maybe that'll get a chance to get played on the radio, but it's a fun song, kind of a working man's anthem, and Luke and Craig did a great job on it.
It's great. And The Rest of It's Mine, what's the origin of that title? Because I did see that as well.
Yeah, that's funny because it's kind of – I was – when I moved back to Florida, I saw all these people that, you know, were in their RVs and active and, you know, looked like they had their life 100% under control, you know, retired maybe in their 50s or 60s, and they're rocking it, man. They're, you know, they're kayaking, they're biking. And I got to laugh, and I thought, yeah, they have sold the house so the kids don't boomerang back around. Yep. Mom and dad is going to get down, and out of they go. They're living their life saying, hey, man, the rest of it's mine. Good luck, kids.
Oh, I got it. I got it. Well, my wife would love that song. She's constantly telling us, downsize. We're going to downsize. We're going to move, you know.
That's right.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
And Saltwater Cowboy, I was listening to that. It mentions Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah.
Did you have a connection with Jimmy Buffett as well, or was that just mentioned in the song?
No, I had, of course, always liked his music, and always that one-man troubadour, you know, before he ever had the Coral Reefer Band and everything. He was playing, you know, a lot of colleges and frat houses, and just with him and a guitar. And we did have a connection. I don't know if you remember when Queen Elizabeth's sister, was it Margaret, Princess Margaret?
Yeah.
She was on a tour all around the United States, and she stopped off in Nashville, and the BMI, I think Francis Preston and some folks that were running BMI at the time, hosted Margaret and invited a few artists that were happened to be in town that day to come by and sing a few songs and tell a few stories. Huh. And happened to be, I think it was Clint Black and myself and Jimmy Buffett.
No kidding. Oh, wow. That's incredible. What is, yep. That's great. And for those who, like you said, are very young or haven't heard your songs before, I remember because I was on morning radio for 30 years. So I remember Only Here for a Little While. Of course, the classic Somewhere in My Broken Heart. You did the song Billy the Kid and Let 'Em Be Little that you wrote with yep. Richie McDonald, right?
Yes, that's right.
You know, great songs. Ugh. And Billy the Kid. Now, Billy Joel has a Billy the Kid, a song called Billy
I've
the Kid.
Heard it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And he said that song is complete BS. He just made it. It's just like a wild story. And people always say, you know, does that have something to do with your life? He goes, absolutely not. But your Billy the Kid does, of course.
Yeah, mine does.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was, you know, my bicycle was like my freedom. Now, said before, you know, my dad was also in World War II, and he actually lost two brothers in that war. And, you know, my dad, it was his job to grow me up quick, you know, because it was in his mind, it was a very dangerous world. And his job was to prepare his son for this, you know, this ugly world. Right.
Sure.
And I kind of rebelled against that. And because every time I was home, it was, you know, we had work and, you know, it was work and chores and you know, just lectures and all that kind of stuff. So I got on my bicycle, man, and that was my freedom. I was out of there. And so, you know, and it's really where I learned to kind of be on my own, and all my neighborhood kids were kind of the same way. We all rode, you know, bikes and played and stayed at each other's houses and stuff. And so those really were some of the good innocent days and some that I miss a lot. And always, it was really a song about, you know, remembering those times that I was away from home, you know, trying to be a kid, because back home was, you know, man, dad was, you know, it was very pretty strict, you know, you, being raised by a World War II dad is sure. It has its challenges.
Sure. But your dad was in a band, right?
He was, that was his therapy, man. Music was his medicine. And, he had a band played at the American Legion Hall every Saturday night. It's where I kind of started.
And the name of the band was The Country Rocks?
That is correct. The Country Rocks. They had to play a little bit of country music, but they had to play a little bit of the rock music because, you know, people couldn't really dance to country music so much unless it was a slow dance. So they would do, in fact, one of the first rock songs they learned was the Bellamy Brothers song, Let Your Love Flow.
Love it.
And they used to play it in the band all the time. And now I've got to be really good friends with the Bellamy Brothers, man. And they've had big influence on me.
Old Hippie. I remember that song. He's an old hippie. And
don't know what to do. That's me.
Speaking of songs that somebody told me that if I just mention the song, you'll probably break out in song. Did you write a song with Eddie Kilgallen?
I did.
Eddie Kilgallen is a great friend. He's from this area.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Yeah, he was in Ricochet.
He was in Ricochet, yeah. And now he's with, the Montgomery of Montgomery Gentry, right?
Yep. No, we did.
What was the song? I said
we wrote a song called I'm Not the Man I Was Yesterday was one of them that we wrote. And Let's Go Make Some.
That's it.
Let's Go Make Some. Yeah. Roll Around the Hay Some.
That's it. He said you'd break out in song at any moment. Even on the plane, you'd start singing that song, right?
Yeah, man. I think we wrote that and we wrote I'm Not the Man I Was Yesterday. He probably don't even remember that. But I've got great little work tapes on my phone. Writing with Eddie and we had a lot of fun and Eddie Montgomery too. The three of us worked on a couple of songs. Sure did.
Interesting. Yeah. So do you collaborate a lot? Were you more in the writing department in the beginning of your career?
Well, I started, it was kind of a stepping stone. I had written a couple of songs before I got to Nashville and I entered into the Wrangler Country Star Search, which was a contest that I did an original song in, and that's where they encouraged me. The judges encouraged me to continue to write songs because Nashville was a songwriting town. And so that was almost kind of like homework to me, like trying to write songs. I just wanted to sing and play guitar, you know?
Right.
And I found out, well, a singer's got to have something to sing. So so I kind of fell in love with the whole creative and collaborative, you know, movement that was going on in Nashville of co-writing. And I really learned a lot. You learn a lot from co-writing with other writers.
Oh, sure.
As to what style they have that people are gravitating to, you know. So you might get a singer like a George Strait or someone who, you know, will sing, you know, Dean Dillon songs, you know, the songwriter who was also an artist. And they'll, you know, a lot of times those artists will learn a lot of the little phrasings and they'll pick up on some of the, you know, the mojo that the writer has, and sure, they'll incorporate. And the between the two, the writer and the artist, they make one incredible musical force, like Dean Dillon and George Strait, you know, or you know, the same thing with Elton John, and it was Elton John and Bernie
Taupin.
Yep, exactly. Sure. And so I had a guy like that. It was kind of his Richard Lee. He'd written songs like "Don't Make My Brown Eyes Blue," and he was kind of a folky, jazzy guitar player and songwriter. And I kind of picked up a lot of the little nuances from him and what he did that made him special, you know.
But what I think would be difficult when you're doing a collaboration. You collaborate on something, you and Eddie Kilgallen, for example, you sit down, you write something, you put it out there, and it becomes this huge hit. And it turns out that Eddie maybe only wrote the title and maybe the first line, but you wrote the rest of it. You know, do you have agreements in the beginning? Hey, no matter what happens, we split this 50-50? Or I can see that becoming, you know, a major conflict sometimes.
You know, it's just kind of understood it's a 50-50 because some days you might have the hot hand, and some days you might be hungover, and and your partner has the hot hand. You know,
right.
You're just in the room taking up space. But we always believe that if the two forces didn't come together that day in that room, no matter where the words came out of whose mouth or whatever, that it, without those two forces in the room, it would have never happened to begin with.
Yeah,
so, and some days it's you spewing the words, and some days it's your partner. And that's just the great collaborative dance that you take when you step into that room to write a song. And the really good co-writers are the ones that get out of the way and let the when it's flowing like that, a good co-writer, it's like slow dancing. Sometimes you lead, sometimes you follow.
Right. Yep. No, you have to have that understanding. Sure. Yeah. I did listen to part of at least the rest of It's Mine, and I saw that you have Somewhere in My Broken Heart on there, but with a symphony, and it's a killer. That's such a great song.
Thank you. Who wrote those string parts for me? It was a couple of people actually worked on those, but the core of the strings were written by David Gates from the group Bread. Wonderful group called Bread, and they had songs like "I Want to Make It with You,"
sure,
and "Diary," and all these songs. And David became a friend, and I found out he was doing arrangements and string arrangements for TV shows and stuff back in the 60s, like The Monkey Show and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, David wrote the string parts for Somewhere in My Broken Heart. And that's, it always felt like we never had the budget, you know, to put strings on a song back in the day, because that was, you know, I was a brand new artist when that song came out.
Sure.
So we didn't have the budgets for orchestras and stuff like that. And it was country music. Keep it simple, stupid was kind of the idea, you know. Yeah, but Somewhere in My Broken Heart was a special song because it, you know, it did win the Song of the Year in 1992, crossed over and adult contemporary and all that good stuff, and so it deserved that kind of treatment.
So that's 30 years old, that song, right?
It is. I can't believe it.
Yep. And I know you're not bragging enough. I saw all your awards here. You had awards from the ACM, the CMA, the American Music Awards. You've got a Grammy Participant Award for Country Salutes Gospel, a Grammy nomination for Somewhere in My Broken Heart, and then you won the ACM. Wow.
Yeah, it was a good run in the 90s. Like my buddy said, the 90s were the 60s turned upside down.
Right. But I saw your schedule online. You're very, very busy. It's not like, you know, I hate talking about people, you know, like 90s country artists in the past tense. I mean, you're still working, you're writing, you're doing all these things. I mean, You're still current.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. You know, we just, you know, the media, the media formats change, you know, sure. obviously with all the streaming platforms and, you know, everybody's, you know, the audience is kind of splintered listening to, some are listening to their phones, some are listening to the radio in the car, yeah. some, sure. you know, so, you know, touring is still the best way to get out in front of the folks and let them know that you're still viable. And you know, this part of the country, New York, has always been so special to me because, you know, it's where the night that Somewhere My Broken Heart went number one, I was in New York City and we were, of course, that's New Manhattan there. We were celebrating and of course, and not only that, the very first radio station was in Manhattan, a station called WYNY.
Well, yeah. And
they were the first one. They never played a brand new unproven artist on their station. They were too big, you know, didn't have to do that. And they did. They played Only Here for a Little While when the Desert Storm Gulf War broke out, and YNY played that song, and the whole East Coast started playing it. And then we started touring all in upstate New York, Albany. Kenny Rogers used to carry me up there all the time, yep. You know, in the New England parts of the country, and where people really didn't speak like we spoke, but they liked country music and they loved stories. And Kenny introduced my music and me up into that area along with WYNY, thanks to them. And I know it's not a country station anymore, but
well, sure. I don't mean to cut you off, but my original partner on the air became the program director of YNY.
Really?
Yes. He's the one that went down there. And, I know it worked for a few years, and then it, you know, flipped formats again. But and I have to tell you a Kenny Rogers story, because I know that you toured with him. I know you did Buy Me a Rose with him, right?
Yep, I sure did.
Which is great. Mm-hmm. When I first started, my second year in radio, I think I was 1990, my partner, the same guy, we did the morning show, and he said to me, you know, tomorrow morning, Kenny Rogers is going to fly into Albany. I said, what? He goes, yeah, he's coming to the radio station. You're not to say anything to anybody, or he's going to turn around and go back, but he's just coming to the radio station, and he wants to know why we're not, you know, playing his songs and what, you know, what you guys can do to get his songs played again. And I thought he was kidding me. But, of course, I right. charged up my video camera that night. We did the morning show the next day and went out to breakfast. We come back. There's like a limo in the driveway, and Kenny Rogers is standing at the front door. And he said, I don't want to go on the air with you. And I don't know really what was said, but he went in with my partner, who was the program director of that station, and sat there and talked to him and was trying to find out why, you know, his songs weren't getting played. And Garth's song, I don't know if he's talking about Garth specifically, but right. how come his songs weren't getting played? Isn't that amazing? He was a great businessman, wasn't he?
Well, he was a businessman. He wanted to, you know, he wanted another record, you know, that Buy Me a Rose, I think it made him, you know, it broke another record of some sort. I think yeah. of like being the oldest guy
yep.
To ever have a number one.
I think it was the Guinness Book of World Records for that.
Wow. The amount of time between number ones.
Yeah. Or the oldest country
oldest
artist
guy.
to release a comeback song or whatever.
Yep. It was funny because we did a TV show called Kenny Rogers, the First 50 Years. And he was just such a humorist. He'd come out and say, you know, the first 50 years was a piece of cake. The second 50 years is going to be a bitch.
He had a funny sense of humor. Yeah. And actually, yeah. years later, you know, Stars on Ice, it's a show that like a traveling
yeah.
show with skaters and stuff. They came to the Albany area, and he was like the middle, the act, the intermission act. He just went out and did a few. Did you know about that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, and this was later on, and he called a radio station or his guy and said, do you mind if Kenny sits in on the morning show with you? And he sat in with us all 4 hours, and then I had a keyboard on the radio because I did like novelty songs on the radio. And during the 9 o'clock hour when you're playing music and we're not really on the air, he walked over to me, and he stands right next to me. He goes, play a Kenny Rogers song. So then my hands started immediately shaking, and I knew Kenny Rogers songs. But for some reason, I just started singing She Believes in Me. Oh, and he goes, what the hell are you singing that song for? Why don't you sing The Gambler? So I started singing The Gambler with him. It was the biggest thrill of my life. I'm telling you, he is the nicest guy. He really was.
I learned a lot from Kenny, man. Yeah. And he always told me, he said, man, it's more important what you do in between songs that you sing. Mm-hmm. And always have a good story and just be a storyteller. And so that's one of the great things in Glen Falls that I plan on doing is over the years I've learned some really good backstories on some of the songs as I've looked back and go, you know, why did I record that? And what happened leading up to that? Oh, great. Yeah, that was a thing that happened there. So that's what we'll do in Glen Falls. We'll basically give you some, you know, the stories behind the songs and some of the hits. And I had a front row seat with Garth Brooks in the 90s, you know, because Garth was on Capitol Records. I was on Capitol Records. And to watch that whole thing go down, it was a phenomenon, man. None of us, including Garth, you know, had ever experienced anything like this where, you know, there was such a demand for his music that there wasn't enough trucks and warehouses and personnel to even service the demand, you know.
I know, so, it was an explosion. It really changed everything. But you don't sound like you're bitter. You know, I could understand if I had another 90s artist on, or, you know, quote unquote 80s and 90s artist on, them being bitter that, you know, they're not getting played anymore. But you don't sound at all like that.
Oh, no, not at all. I'm very grateful, very thankful. Because Garth put us all, Garth made us all cool, you know, again, you know, it's like, you know, country music for me growing up was, that was the music of your mom and dad, you
right.
know, that was old folks music, really. And Garth came along and brought the kiss to the, you know, the rock and roll mentality to the performing. And he electrified audiences with, especially the rodeo audiences. You got a bunch of bull riders and bronc riders and cowboys, at a rodeo, you know, you go to a rodeo, you know, you hear this incredible, you know, music they play and very high energy. And I mean, it's a show, you know, rodeo is a high energy, very, exciting show. And I think Garth saw that Chris LeDoux was capitalizing on that. You know, Chris LeDoux was a real cowboy. He was a world champion bronc rider. But man, after the rodeo, he would come out on stage, jump over the drums, land on the stage after he's been riding broncs all day, and put on a rock and roll cowboy show. And that's what Garth did. And the young people started getting into it, and he made us all cool again, you know?
Yeah, I remember when he came here, I say to this day, it's the best concert I've ever seen in my life. Oh my God, was he incredible back then. He really was. I know he can't swing from the chandeliers now necessarily, but you can't expect him to, right?
No doubt, right? He would climb up on those cables and everything and the speaker. He was an entertainer. And that's that was another thing that Kenny Rogers stressed to me as well, is that, you know, be an entertainer. Right. That never gets old.
Yep. And one last thing, because I know you do have to go, but I was thinking, with your singing range, you could keep doing this. You know, when you have like a Brian Wilson or even Paul McCartney or Frankie Valli of the Four Seasons or even like a Colin Ray, and, you know, it's got to be limiting the amount of time they can hit those notes. I mean, it's just natural. But with your range, I can see you doing it forever, really.
Well, man, I've been really lucky. In fact, I was just with Colin Ray. I went to see them boys, Roots and Boots boys, and Colin, man, he hit every note. Hadn't dropped any keys.
Really?
So, here for me, I hadn't dropped any keys, but, you know, it takes a little bit more prep before a show, you know, drink a lot of water, can't really have too much coffee or alcohol or anything like that before a show. I try to really respect that. But it just takes a little more time to get it cranked up. But yeah, I feel stronger today than I really felt like in the 90s. I think I know how to travel and maintain myself a little bit better than I used to.
Absolutely. No, you sounded great on this album. We can't wait to see you up here in Glens Falls at the Woods Theater. It's going to be Saturday night. Of course, there are people who are probably hearing this 6 months from now and not know what we're talking about. But yeah, and in fact, this show that Kevin Richards has put on, we've already had, like I said, Randy Travis, but Susie Boggess, who you've worked with as well, right?
Oh, yeah. She's one of my good friends. We were friends before we ever had record deals. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, he did an up close and personal with her, and he did one with Larry Gatlin, and you've worked with him.
I sure have, man. Me and Larry are, I love to hear stories from him, and he's an incredible songwriter. We've written two or three songs. We wrote a song that went viral years ago. We wrote a kind of a song to all the terrorists out there that were kicking us off, man. We called, I think the title was An American with a Remington.
That's what it was, because I saw it and I actually listened to it. I was like, wow, that's, you know, that was a stretch for you. As far as, I mean, you don't really take on controversial issues much.
No. Never. I didn't want to do that, but Gatlin was, he was always in the middle of it. I said, dude, I don't know enough about, I keep it music only, man. That's, that's all I know, music, and I stay inside my lane. I don't want to get out, you know. I've had things that go viral, you know, because I do like to, you know, I do like to write songs that, you know, that get a reaction.
Sure.
But I don't wake up trying to look for the car wreck, you know, every day. I don't do that.
Because that was a Toby Keith kind of song. Right.
It wasn't a joke. When ICE was going down and all that stuff, and my son was working for Remington at the time. How we really got the idea was my son was working for Remington in the marketing department, and he said, "Hey, Dad, you know Remington was the first American company to ever manufacture anything in America. They were the first manufacturer," is what I heard, is what he told me. And I said, wow, man, nothing's more American than a Remington. That's pretty cool. And of course, when I said American and Remington,
that's
just a rhythm. That's a rhythm thing. You know, my rhythm brain goes, ooh, American, Remington. They go, those two words go together. It was Larry Gatlin that figured out how to put them together.
That's perfect. And when I was on the air, and I still continue to mess around with it, I always did song parodies. And actually, I looked, because I know I did a parody of your song Only Here for a Little While, because I was outside doing yard work, and I did Gonna Mow What Needs Mowing, Rake What Needs Raking, Mulch What Needs Mulching. And I've been looking on my hard drive for it. I can't find it. But
Well, you got to find that or not rewrite that. That's hilarious. I love that. I love parodies, and I love comedy. And, man, you got to keep that up. I have to tune into your show to hear some of this stuff, because I love comedy. That's what Kenny Rogers loved, comedy. Yeah. And it's my favorite. It's one thing, you know, it's powerful to be able to sing a song, make somebody think and tear up or whatever. But there is nothing like getting a laugh out of somebody. That's the best medicine there is, I think, in the entertainment.
Well, I got one more little story for you then. I did this little opening thing for Randy Travis. And what he had me do was sing like a medley of his hits, because Randy can't sing his own songs, right? And then his wife would comment on the songs. It was just such an amazing thrill. He's sitting right on the stage. And I did a song parody of Digging Up Bones my first year in the radio. And it was about the traffic here. They're putting up cones, doing things that would be better left alone. And I did the song parody for him. And again, it was such a thrill. My hands were shaking, and I'm looking in my peripheral vision, and he's laughing like hell. And I just got such a kick out of it.
I love seeing when he laughs now, man, his whole face is a giant smile. And he loves to hear Paul Overstreet's funny songs. He's got a lot of funny songs, like It Takes a Whole Lot of Liquor to Like Her and all that kind of stuff, you know. And Randy just laughs so much. He loves sense of humor, and I'm still glad to see him going and pushing doing it. Hopefully I get to say hello to you up in Glen Falls. I don't know if you'll be in the area or get to come to the show or not.
Gonna be there with my wife. Perfect. Yes, I can't wait to meet you there. Yes,
that'll be awesome.
That'd be great. Well, Billy, thank you so much. Really, thanks for taking the time. I know you're at the airport waiting to get the expensive coffee and the expensive magazine from the magazine store, right?
Exactly. Fall asleep, but as soon as I start reading, out I go.
All right. All right, Billy, thanks again. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, buddy. Appreciate you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
thanks a lot to Billy for calling in on that. His latest album, again, is The Rest of It's Mine. And you can find it. I found it on Apple Music. I'm sure you can find it on Amazon Music and every place else. Saltwater Cowboy is a great song. You got to listen to that. And you can also, again, hear the remix of Somewhere in My Broken Heart with a symphony orchestra. You will die when you hear this. It's so beautiful. That's it. I got some cool guests in the pipeline getting ready to interview. One of them is the Fab Four, another Beatle tribute act. But when I say another, I don't think you need the other ones because these guys are just impeccable. Oh, my God, you should hear them. I've seen clips of them on YouTube, and I'm going to, being a Beatle fan like everybody else, I'm really, really thrilled to be talking with one of the members of the Fab Four. And also, I have another podcast coming up with a gentleman. His name is Zain Abidine, and he is from Pakistan. He became a friend of mine. We met online. We were talking about a piece of software, Logic Pro, which is a DAW, a digital audio workstation for the Mac. And we ended up talking, and he was telling me that he had a song that he was interested in getting a piano player to play on. And I didn't think that I would fit the format, but he sent me the song, and it was this beautiful ballad. And I put the piano track on it. And he also got another gentleman